Chapter 8. The Blackstone rushed towards them, voltaic and grim, choking the darkness and silencing everyone on the bridge of the Vanguard. Drake had been this close so many times before, but familiarity did nothing to lessen the shock. There was no familiarity, in fact. Every time he returned, the horror was new, the menace more explicit. Explosions flittered across the surface, caused by failed approaches and colliding debris, splashing light over a baffling jumble of polyhedrons. Drake tried to discern a pattern, tracing the planes and vertices, but with every fitful burst of light, the shapes became more confused. Shapes without shape, each more bewildering than the last. 5 degrees starboard, said Ordus. She spoke softly, but her words jarred in the heavy silence that had fallen over the bridge. Drake's pilot responded, and the primary thrusters roared, the sound vibrating up through the deck plating and causing Drake's Amasek to slosh in its glass. He finished the drink and studied his companions. The western reaches had robbed him of most prejudices. Such luxuries would be laughable in a place like Precipice. Even so, this was an unusual group. Corval was at his side, his thoughts unreadable, hidden behind his helmet. At Drake's other side was Isola, studying the hololithic star chart that hovered in the middle of the bridge. An attaché and a navigator. Perfectly respectful companions for a rogue trader. But not so the others. Taddeus the Purifier was seated at the back of the bridge, mouthing silent prayers. His florid features were beaded with sweat, and he was not even looking at the Blackstone. There was a book open on his lap, a handwritten journal, the pages rife with lurid apocalypses and coin-eyed corpses. His sweat was pattering on the gaudy vellum, landing with a gentle, persistent tap. Beside him was his disciple, Pius Vaughan, her fists locked tightly around her flamer and her eyes closed in prayer. There were a few officers of the Drake Household Guard scattered around the bridge, but none of them were standing anywhere near Grek. The Kroot was hunched in his seat, straining against his harness like a captured animal. It was hard to know if the Blackstone unnerved him as much as everyone else, because his eyes were hidden. Almost as soon as they left Precipice, Grek had reached into his sack and taken out a bloodbird, one of the dripping crimson moths that Gatto kept in the helmsman. The creature was still alive and fluttering weakly, but Grek had strapped it to his face so that the creature's wings obscured his eyes. Every now and then, Grek would place a hand on his stomach and mutter something in his own language, but he had said nothing else since takeoff. Ordus was leaning over Drake's pilot, watching his every move until the time came for her to take the controls. Isola had offered her new clothes, but she had insisted on wearing her filthy old navy flight suit with its bulky pouches, air sockets and hastily removed insignia. The las pistol Drake had given her was now strapped to her leg, and she had also acquired a combat knife while he'd been away. Drake was keen to know her story. Grek had called her a deserter, and Gatto claimed the Imperial Navy had put a price on her head, but Drake felt there was something more to her than that. In Belosus's hold, she had shown no sign of fear or panic. There was no trace of cowardice in Ordus. So why was she on the run? He resolved to quiz her when there was time, but for now, he had noticed that she seemed excited about something, leaning over the controls and muttering to the pilot. He crossed the bridge to stand beside her. She tapped the view screen, pointing at a cluster of runes. "Here," she said, sounding slightly dazed. "The dragon's teeth." "You sound surprised." Ordus shrugged. "This place is insane, you know that. I hoped I would find it, but I was never sure, and we've reached it much faster than I expected." Isola eyed her suspiciously. "And navigating through the teeth? Is it merely a hope that you can manage that?" Ordus scowled at her. "This is good news. We could have circled the fortress for weeks before hitting the right track. How long have we been out here? An hour or two?"
4 hours and 35 minutes, replied Isola.
Ordus was no longer listening. "Move," she said to the pilot. I'll take it from here. You don't want to be responsible for what happens when we reach the teeth. The pilot looked at Drake, who nodded. Orders shuffled in her seat, familiarising herself with the displays and controls and nudging the ship into a new approach trajectory, teasing another roar from the Vanguard's engines. Drake, Corval and Isola all walked past her and looked up at the bridge's oculus, dwarfed by the huge dome of the armour glass. The hull was surrounded by a corona of flames as debris collided with the ship's void shield, but after a few minutes, they saw something definite amongst all the obscurity. A colonnade. Two parallel rows of spires hanging in the void, leading towards the Blackstone. Fascinating, said Corval. These are the dragon's teeth, asked Drake, without looking back at Ordis. She nodded, still fiddling with the Vanguard's controls. Strap in. There's a lot of crap to fly through before I can really scare you. Drake and the others had barely had the chance to find seats and fasten their safety harnesses when Ordis banked hard, hurling the Vanguard past the elegant bones of an Eldari void ship, its hull picked clean by salvage crews, leaving just a framework of ribs and spars. Almost immediately, Ordis rolled the Vanguard in the opposite direction as another Leviathan surged towards them, a rusting hulk so blasted and warped it was impossible to recognise. The bridge of the Vanguard was lined with tall alcoves, each of which housed a hard-wired servitor, semi-human wretches, mindless beyond the very specific navigation tasks allotted to them. Most were little more than a head and an exposed spinal column welded into a nest of bionics, surrounded by a jumble of iron limbs that clattered across control panels as the servitors made adjustments and calculations. As Ordis wrenched the Vanguard from port to starboard, steering it with increasing violence, the servitors chanted hymns, soothing the ship's machine spirit with droning plainsong, verse and answer echoing up into the barrel-vaulted ceiling. Drake was not interested in the wrecks or Ordis's impressive manoeuvres, but he leant forwards in his seat, fascinated by the approaching landmark. He could tell from the drifting remnants of ships surrounding it that the colonnade was vast. The columns looked like narrow, inverted pyramids, canines bereft of a mouth, or the pilings of a pier. They began hundreds of miles from the Blackstone and terminated at its surface, framing an area of shadow that Drake knew was a docking point. "It does not seem a particularly challenging approach," said Corval. Before Drake could reply, Ordis looked back over her shoulder. "Wait and see." As they neared the first of the spires, Drake saw how tightly packed they were. There would be no way to fly through the sides of the colonnade. They would have to go straight down its centre, like an honour guard at a funerary procession. Even so, he had to agree with Corval. It would not be hard to glide down the centre of the colonnade, even for a shuttle as large as the Vanguard. In fact, it was one of the easier approaches he had seen. He glanced at Grek, wondering if the creature had tricked him. Was it really essential to bring Ordis along? Or did Grek invent a reason for Drake to rescue his friend? The Kroot was still wearing his fluttering bloodbird mask. It seemed unlikely he would have friends. Ordis laughed. "Ha! Looks like we're not the only ones with a death wish." Drake looked back out through the oculus, and his augmetic eyes zoomed in on a flash of silver, flickering at the entrance to the colonnade. "Xenos," he said. The craft was dwarfed by the monolithic stone towers, but Drake recognised its looping organic curves. "Eldari." Ordis adjusted her trajectory, giving them time to watch as the alien ship glided towards the dragon's teeth. "Now you'll see what you're paying me for," she said, settling back in her chair. The bridge fell silent as they watched the scene unfold. The distant ship passed the first of the vast talons without incident, but then, a few minutes later, the two lines of rock began to sway and drift out of position, like parading soldiers dazed by the sun and falling out of step. It created a ripple of movement that rolled away from the Eldari ship, as though the craft had disturbed the surface of an invisible pool. At first, the rock seemed to be moving at random, but Drake slowly began to discern a pattern, complex and baffling, but a pattern all the same. The spurs of rock rolled and drifted, but never collided, moving past each other like partners in a dance. It was an incredible sight. The rocks were the height of mountains, but they glided between each other with easy, seamless grace. The Aldari ship held its course for a while, racing down the avenue of claws, but soon the pendulum swings of the rocks caused it to veer and bank. The closer the ship came to the Blackstone, the more violent the rock swayed, rushing towards each other and turning on end. The Aldari pilot was clearly skilled. The speck of silver weaved between the tumbling rocks with an acrobatic series of loops and dives, and Orda slent forward in her seat to watch. "Damn, they know their stuff. I think they might..." Her words trailed off as the rocks whirled amongst each other in a bewildering flurry. The ship hit one and detonated. There was a brief petal of flame, then the embers scattered to the void. One by one, the rocks slowed and fell back into position. After a few minutes, the wreckage of the ship had vanished, and the drifting colonnade looked like it had not moved for a millennia. Isola turned to Drake. "This is madness, Captain, even by the standards of the Blackstone." Drake looked at Ordus. "Is it madness?" "Of course," she laughed.
"She got us through before," said Grek,
his words muffled by his fleshy mask. Thaddeus stared at Isola, outraged.
"Everything is as I have foretold."
Drake was still holding Ordus's gaze.
"Look," she said, "I wouldn't have come if I didn't think this was doable."
Drake was a skilled duelist and marksman, and more widely read than anyone he knew, but it was his aptitude as a judge of character that kept him alive. Ordus was hiding something. She was full of flippant comments and nonchalant sarcasm, but it was a smokescreen. When Drake looked in her eyes, he saw hunger, the same hunger that had driven him to risk everything going back to the Blackstone. She needed this as much as he did. Her cocksure gaze faltered as she sensed Drake peering into her thoughts. That moment of doubt was enough for him. She was no fool, and she was not insane. He nodded.
"Take us to the Blackstone."
She looked at him a moment longer, as though wanting to refute something he had not even said. Then she muttered and turned back to the controls.
2 degrees starboard."
The cathedral-sized ship turned slowly to face the stone colonnade. The rocks drew the eye inescapably towards the confounding surface of the fortress, a tenebrous jumble of plains and peaks.
"Primary thrusters 2 and 3.
Her gaze locked on the avenue rising up ahead of them. As they drifted closer, the rocks took on a surreal aspect, their vast size distorting perspective as they leant over the vanguard.
"Engage,"
she said, and the ship hurtled forwards between the first two rocks. This close, it was impossible to imagine such Goliaths mobile, but as the vanguard sped on, Drake quickly saw movement. The towers leant away from the ship as though repelled, then rolled back, pendulum-like, gathering momentum. Ordus whistled tunelessly as she gripped the controls and steered the vessel manually, trying a few gentle rolls. The mind-wiped servitors fidgeted, rattling in their alcoves, muttering binaric code and adjusting brass-plated cogitators. Ordus looped and rolled the vanguard, as though it were no bigger than a fighter. Her whistling became less tuneful and more forced, but there was no other sign she was under stress. As her manoeuvres became more daring, she became more relaxed, settling her broad shoulders back into the command chair and controlling the ship with a single hand. The stones turned faster. Soon, it looked like the vanguard was hurtling through an avalanche, tossed at the sides of an earthquake, riding the crest of a basalt thunderhead. But still, Ordus looked calm. The whistle faded, but her lips remained in the same position, needlessly pursed, her expression forgotten as she focused every thought on the dance. As he watched her, a strange thought occurred to Drake. The Titans whirled around them were moving in a familiar pattern. He had seen this dance before. He leant forwards against his restraint, staring at the maelstrom. No, not a dance, he realised. A different kind of art. The art. The stones were duelling. Positions and thrusts. Thrusts and parries. Parries and returns. A dazzling display of the skills Drake learned as a youth. His hand moved in time, almost involuntarily, and he mouthed terms his father drove into him on the point of a blade. Prime. Second. Kaut. Tels. Kant. Turned to the side. Leg straight. Head up. Thrust. Disengage. Thrust. Parry. What is this? He whispered, with a rising sense of alarm. Was he losing his mind? Was this the madness Ordus had spoken of? He looked around the bridge and saw that the others were unchanged. Grek was hidden behind the bloody creature on his face. Taddeus was reading his journal, not even looking at the lunacy of Ordus's manoeuvres. Isola was scowling, but it was her usual scowl. Pius Vaughan looked deranged, her eyes rolling feverishly in sunken sockets. But that was how she had appeared when she first admitted him to Taddeus's barge. The house guard, who had remained on the bridge, were watching Ordus with awed expressions, but none of them showed any sign of confusion. He looked back out of the oculus. Prime. Second. Kaut, he muttered. Parry. Disengage. There was no doubt. The stone's movement followed the principles he had learnt at the academies on terror. Impossible, he muttered. But he could almost picture his father's stern, impassive face breaking into an unexpected smile, pleased as Drake surprised him with his skill, learning the positions and techniques that only an older swordsman would usually attempt. Just like on the Ecclesiarchy barge, when he had spoken of the Imperial Palace, Drake found himself unexpectedly jolted into the past, caught unawares by a memory that had been hidden for decades. The rocks moved so fast, their shapes grew blurred and abstract, impossible to discern. As quickly as it came, the memory vanished. But it left Drake with an odd feeling of disquiet, as though the stones knew something about his past that he did not, as though they knew him. How can she see? Whispered Isola, staring at Ordus, not speaking to anyone in particular. The scene beyond the oculus was a dazzling blur of textures and after-images. Ordus's hands moved across the control panel with an almost inhuman speed, her expression blank. Then she exhaled a long-held breath and collapsed back in her seat. The tumult outside vanished, revealing a sheer wall of darkness, scored with hundreds of faint, luminous intersections.
"Emperor be praised!" intoned Taddeus, tracing runes in the air.
Grek ripped the bloodbird from his face and stashed it back in his bag, staring at the mountainous shape looming over them. For a moment, something flickered in his eyes. A hint of emotion. Drake wondered if he had misjudged the creature. Perhaps there was something more going on in that head than he had imagined. Drake looked back at the Blackstone, recalling with a grimace the odd sensation that always hit him when he came this close to it. The fortress was made of a black alien substrate, like a great slab of obsidian, cold and inert. But every time Drake approached its surface, he had the unpleasant feeling that it was watching him, looking him directly in the eye, peering into his soul. Ordus steered the vanguard towards a diamond-shaped fissure in the rock. It would have been just a patch of darkness in the darkness, but the edges were limned with a faint, cold glow, shining from somewhere deep within the fortress. Ordus waved Drake's pilot over and walked away from the controls, looking a little punch-drunk as she flopped into a different seat.
"You can take it from here," she said. "You'll see a plateau just inside the vent when you get closer. It works perfectly as a landing platform. Drake nodded at her.
You have earned your share. You can wait on the vanguard, if you like, until we need you for the return journey.
She stared, dazed, looking through him rather than at him. Then she shook her head and focused on his face.
Wait here? Screw that. You aren't leaving me alone in this place. I'm with you for the duration.
He nodded. It was probably for the best. They were a small group, and however coarse Ordus was, she was an able fighter. Then he remembered the strange thought he'd had while she was navigating the rocks.
Do you fence? He asked.
She laughed.
What?
He shook his head.
No matter. Is the atmosphere stable down there?
She frowned at him, intrigued, then shrugged.
Yes, same as the rest of this place. There must be an airlock of some kind as we reach the vent, but I've never seen it. I've no idea how they work. You certainly don't see anything closing behind you.
He nodded. It had been the same each time he docked. The Blackstone was clearly not made by human hands, but the air was breathable, although it did not always behave as one might expect. As the Vanguard plunged into the Blackstone, its thrusters splashed crimson over the fissure's walls, and the resultant jumble of shadows only made the place seem more bewildering. Drake saw enough to know they were alone, though. The plateau Ordus had mentioned was about a mile wide, diamond in shape, and crisscrossed with the same network of pale lines they'd seen on the surface. It was a simple enough job to make the final approach and land the shuttle, and 10 minutes later they clattered down the landing ramp into the darkness. The cold hit first, sugaring their boots with a glitter of frost. Then came the sounds, distant and subterranean, an eerie mixture of rumbling and clangs, muffled and distant, as though heard underwater. They echoed and reverberated, half-heard, speaking of bottomless pits and vast immeasurable distances. Finally, there was the presence, the indefinable sense Drake had recalled during their final approach, the unshakable feeling that the Blackstone was peering into one's soul. A mountainous sentience, studying microbe-like invaders. For a long minute, they all stood there, staring into the blackness, paralysed by the strangeness of the place, looking for movement in the shadows, recalling horrors they had seen before. Then Drake strode ahead of the group, the lumen on his pistol stifled by the sombre gloom. He waved the feeble light from left to right, but it only revealed the ground a few feet in either direction. The clatter of his boots echoed up through the blackness, describing a cavernous space. His guards fanned out around him, trying to pierce the darkness with the lumens on their lasguns, but they were as unsuccessful as Drake. Their brass-trimmed uniforms glittered like jewels languishing at the bottom of a well. Thaddeus and Vaughan came to stand beside him, followed by Isola, Ordus, and finally Greg. They all stared into the nothingness, wonder in their eyes.
Which way? Drake asked, turning to Thaddeus.
The priest hesitated, hunched forwards, clutching the medallion-like rosarius hung around his neck and muttering something under his breath.
Your Eminence, said Drake. Which way?
Thaddeus nodded and straightened his back, causing his robes to rustle around his prodigious gut.
A moment, Captain, he said,
placing his hand over the relic and closing his eyes. The device responded to his touch. Diodes flickered into life around its edges, and there was a series of ratcheting clicks as its mechanism whirred into life. Then he took out his journal and flicked through the pages, jabbing one of his fat fingers at his notes.
Straight on, he said,
slamming the book and pointing dramatically ahead with his mace.
For half a mile until we reach the far side. This hall leads us to an antechamber. Beyond that lies the maglev.
He glanced at his disciple, Vaughan.
The maglev will take us to the Ascurus vault.
She stared back at him, the light of the relic flashing in her widened eyes.
Emperor be praised, she whispered.
Emperor be praised, replied Thaddeus.
Drake nodded, and was about to move on when he recalled the apocalyptic scenes that filled Thaddeus's barge. Eyeless, wailing masses, consumed by flames that radiated from a saintly priest. He glanced at the book hanging from Thaddeus's belt and remembered a question he had intended to ask before they left Precipice.
Your Eminence, what do your visions show once you have the eye of...
The eye of Hermias, whispered Vaughan, making the sign of the Aquila.
Drake nodded.
What will happen when you retrieve the eye of Hermias? What will you do with it?
Thaddeus gripped Drake's shoulder in his large, meaty hand. He leant close, his eyes as wide as Vaughan's, his breath coming in quick gasps.
I will see.
Ordus was standing next to the two priests, fiddling with the pistol Drake had given her. At Thaddeus's words, she smirked. Thaddeus's enraptured grin became a snarl.
I will see the truth, he said, sneering at her. And I will see every soul that harbours deceit, every soul that contains beliefs outside the imperial creed. I will see the impure, the damned, the faithless, the disloyal.
His full crimson lips trembled, glistening with spit.
I will see who should be saved.
He leant close to Ordus.
And who should burn?
She rolled her eyes. He nodded slowly, stepping closer, trying to cow her with his bulk.
Even a devout soul such as mine can be tricked, but not Hermias. His vision was clear. Once I see what he saw, I can strike with impunity.
He was breathing quickly, warming to his theme.
I will complete the work he began all those centuries ago. I will begin a new crusade and...
Your Excellency, said Vaughan, placing a hand on his arm. They won't understand.
Thaddeus gave her a sympathetic smile.
They must, if they are to endure what lies ahead.
Perhaps, said Drake, but not now. Lead us to the Maglev. Once we're on our way to the Oscurus Vault, you can tell us more.
He gave Ordus a warning glance, and she looked away, still smirking. Drake was about to wave the group on when he remembered Corval. He thought for a moment that the navigator might have remained on board the Vanguard, but then he noticed him a few feet behind the others, a pillar of darkness, motionless, barely visible.
Emissary Corval, he said,
are you ready to begin?
Corval took a moment to reply, watching the group in silence. Then he nodded. Drake nodded back, and strode off in the direction Thaddeus had indicated.
It won't be long before the Blackstone welcomes us back.
His breath trailed behind him as he went, a silver plume spiralling in the gunlights.
Keep your weapons ready!
Most of the group followed in a loose V formation, but Greg lopped off to his left, hunched over his rifle, his rangy frame pacing in and out of view.
Stay close, he said,
but Greg gave no sign he'd heard, staring into the void along the barrel of his rifle. As they hurried across the vast space, the feeling of being watched grew stronger, and the noises grew louder. Some sounded like huge pipes rattling against metal, others like mournful choirs, alien and incoherent, rising to a crescendo. Drake heard, quite clearly, the unmistakable sound of a lasgun firing repeatedly, desperate bursts before being suddenly silenced. They heard screams, human perhaps, but too distorted by distance for him to be sure. They had only crossed half the distance when the strangeness of the Blackstone started to assert itself. At first, Drake thought he had merely slipped. He was striding ahead of the group, scouring the shadows for signs of movement, when his feet suddenly slid from beneath him. He landed painfully on his side, hitting the cold, unforgiving floor. He tried to rise, but started sliding to the left, drawn by an invisible force.
"Gravity shift!" he cried out. "Grips!"
Anyone who had travelled through the Blackstone knew the mercurial nature of its physics. Nothing was fixed. Nothing was permanent. Nothing could be trusted. As Drake slid across the floor with increasing speed, he felt no panic. He'd been through this several times. He holstered his pistol and calmly unclasped grappling hooks from his belt, swinging them into the grooves that crossed the floor. The hooks sank into the gaps with a loud clang. For a moment he dangled there, hanging from the hooks as his mind adjusted to the new physics. The floor was now a wall, and the new floor was somewhere far beneath him, perhaps miles below. The others had all come prepared. Most carried hooks of their own, and, at Drake's warning, they jammed them into the wall to avoid plummeting down the sheer drop. Corval had something more refined, a pair of maglocks in the palms of his gauntlets, and he moved with spider-like ease across the rock face.
"Keep going?"
asked Drake, looking back for Thaddeus. With his pistol holstered, he was now in almost complete darkness. But the rosarius beneath Thaddeus's chin radiated pale light, and the priest's jocund features bobbed towards him out of the blackness, like a severed head. Thaddeus grunted and puffed as he hauled his bulk across the wall, but he nodded.
"The gravity shifts again when we reach the antechamber, if everything is as it was last time."
"Unlikely," muttered Ordus, earning herself a glare from the priest.
The going became painfully slow as they clambered across the side of the crevasse, lunging and swinging their hooks into the narrow channels. At one point, Isola cursed and scrambled furiously as one of her hooks plunged into the void. Drake was about to head back and help when one of the guards reached out and handed her another. Even in the faint light of Thaddeus's rosarius, Drake could see her annoyance at being the only one who had struggled. He stayed silent and carried on climbing. By this point, his shoulders were burning with the pain of holding himself aloft.
"Almost there," said Thaddeus, as though sensing his pain. "A few more minutes and you'll see the entrance."
Drake nodded and continued swinging across the polished stone, his knuckles skinned from bashing across the wall. A few minutes later, he saw a pale ghost up ahead, a horizontal strip of grey that spurred out of the wall, an area of lighter dark. He realised it was a doorway, just seen side on due to his current angle. As he neared the aperture, he began to discern shapes in the chamber beyond, angles and inclines, similar to those he'd seen on the surface, but built on an equally daunting scale. He was about to ask Thaddeus if this looked like the right place when pain knifed through one of his hands. He looked up and saw that he had sliced one of his grappling hooks through the side of his gauntlet, cutting away some skin. He could feel blood trickling down his wrist and into his sleeve. He cursed his clumsiness. Blood-slick hands would not be able to grip as well as he needed. He wiped the side of his hand on the wall, trying to stem the flow. As he passed his hand over the surface, some of the blood sank into one of the narrow angles that crisscrossed the wall. As his blood disappeared into the groove, it caused a reaction. What he had taken to be rock blistered into dozens of little black plates, like flakes of iron ore. However many times Drake came to the Blackstone, it always showed him something new. He watched, fascinated as the flakes shifted and clicked, locking together in a neat, tessellating pattern. The pattern took on three dimensions, becoming pyramidal, like a geometric puzzle carried on dozens of glinting chitinous legs. It moved with mechanical stiffness, like a clockwork automaton, and there was something almost comedic about how it skittered across the smooth black wall. Then it fastened itself to the back of his gauntlet and began feeding. Drake gasped in surprise as fresh pain knifed through his hand. He could not see any face or mouth, but blood and shreds of leather began rushing from his hand. He loosed his grip from the wall and slammed the thing, backhanded against the rock. Rather than falling or fleeing, it locked its legs even more tightly around his gauntlet and started vibrating, like a motor, scattering more blood into the air.
"Damn you!"
he muttered, gripping the wall again. As the pain grew, he realised that the thing was about to cut through his tendons. He could never hold his weight one-handed. He looked down to see if there was a ledge, but it was like trying to see through oil. He tried to wedge his feet into some of the channels in the wall, but it was useless. The grips of his boots were far too thick to find purchase. This absurd little device might stop him before he even reached the maglev chamber. He looked back to the others, but they were too far away to help. Keeping his damaged hand on the wall, he grabbed his pistol with the other hand and fired into the pyramid shell. It shattered like glass, filling the air with coal-like shards that flipped away, tinkling down into the abyss. Drake muttered a curse as he saw the mess it had made of his hand. There were dozens of tears through his gauntlet and broken skin beneath, glistening and bloody. The tendons were intact, though, and his hand still worked. He was about to continue on his way when he noticed that the wall beneath him was rippling, apparently affected by the blood he had spilled, moving like fallen leaves caught in the breeze, flaking and rising, becoming a shifting mass. As he scrambled further across the wall, he saw that the shards were forming into pyramids, hundreds of them, identical to the one that had just shredded his hand.
"Move!"
he yelled. Most of the group were still several minutes from the portal. Drake reached the opening and stepped inside, finding to his relief that gravity had returned to its original direction and he could stand. He looked back in time to see a blinding explosion of light. Heat ripped through the frigid air. He staggered back, shielding his face, engulfed by the stink of burning promethium. When the glare faded, he was faced with the surreal sight of the others clambering across the same surface he was standing on, hauling themselves furiously towards him, their legs dangling uselessly a few inches in the air. The wall was alight with dozens of fires. Vaughn dragged herself towards Drake, gripping her flame one-handed, its muzzle still glowing and dripping fuel. Her mouth was a determined snarl, and as she climbed through the doorway, she spat prayers at the burning shapes behind. The others quickly followed, turning to look back at the inferno she had created. The blaze was fierce, bright enough to finally shed some light across the chamber they'd just crossed. Every inch of the wall and floor was in motion, clicking, tumbling, and forming a sea of black pyramids. Thousands of them, some as small as the one that had attacked Drake, but others as big as canids. The larger ones were as featureless as the smaller ones, just black pyramids carried on a jumble of multi-jointed legs. They were all moving towards the doorway, a flood of angles and thrashing limbs. As Drake bound his injured hand, the walls began rising and reforming, shedding tides of pyramids as they took on a new shape.
"Can we close this?"
he asked, looking up at the portal they'd just clambered through. It was rhombus-shaped, a skewed diamond, over 100 feet tall. Drake could see no markings anywhere around its frame, nor any sign of a door. The ocean of geometric shapes was clattering and rolling towards them with increasing speed, gaining momentum, like a wave rushing towards a beach. The distant, half-heard chorus was climbing even higher, more like screams than music, merging with the metallic echoing booms. Vaughn lifted her flamer and targeted the approaching wave, but she looked absurd. It was like pointing a gun at an avalanche. Drake looked at Thaddeus.
"Does it close?"
Thaddeus shook his head, flicking through the pages of his book.
"This isn't right. This didn't happen the last time we came."
Ordus laughed.
"You're looking that up in a book. This is the Blackstone. Nothing happens like last time."
Vaughn glared at her, keeping her burner pointed at the approaching storm.
"Address His Excellency with respect."
Ordus scowled, but before she could reply, Drake nodded to the darkness that lay in the opposite direction.
"Then we keep moving," he said,
How far to the maglev chamber?
This antechamber is smaller than the room we just passed through, said Thaddeus.
He was sweating, despite the cold, and he dabbed his eyes with his sleeve.
If gravity remains stable, and we run, 5 minutes or so.
Isola had drawn her pistol and was pointing it at the carpet of scuttling pyramids. We could never stop them all. Drake nodded.
Then we run.
He looked at Thaddeus.
Which way?
The priest was momentarily hypnotized by the sight of the previous chamber collapsing and rushing towards them. Then he nodded and raced off into the darkness.
Follow! He bellowed. The God Emperor is with us!
They ran, keeping close to Thaddeus, using the lumens on their scopes, but only managing to reveal glimpses of what lay ahead. The chamber seemed almost identical to the last, sheer black rock lined with a tracery of geometric designs, but the floor sloped away to the left, meaning they had to run at an awkward angle. There was no sign of the triangular machines, but Drake guessed it was only a matter of time. Finally, for the first time since they arrived, Drake saw a light source. Thaddeus became a rippling silhouette, his robes fluttering against the rising pale glow. It was like a dawn, cold and grey-blue, creeping over the horizon ahead of them. It revealed a flat, featureless plain. Thaddeus was making for something, some landmark Drake had yet to spot. They all ducked as a deafening smash rang out. It came from behind them, the sound of 1,000 plates crashing on rock. Drake kept running, but looked back over his shoulder to see the pyramids flooding through the portal, a tumbling, glinting landslide of angular shapes. They spilled onto the floor of the antechamber and sped after them, their spindly legs clinking across the stone like a hailstorm. Some of the group paused, looking back, horrified.
Keep going, cried Drake. There are none up ahead.
As he looked back at Thaddeus, he saw the point the priest was racing towards. It was like a facet of enormous crystal, a hexagon of light that deepened the darkness around it. Thaddeus was entirely silhouetted now, but Drake could tell he had stopped.
This is it, cried the priest.
Drake raced to his side.
Why have you stopped? He demanded,
trying to haul the priest forwards. The machines were thundering towards them, gaining speed, only minutes away.
Wait,
muttered Thaddeus, rifling through the pages of the book. A few of the guards arrived, but Drake waved them on towards the light source. The rest of the group caught up and gathered around Drake and Thaddeus.
Excellency, gasped Pius Vaughan. This is it.
She waved at the light ahead.
I remember it clearly.
The guards were still racing towards the shape, but the rest of the group hesitated, seeing the doubt in the priest's face.
They're almost on us, said Corval, his metallic voice echoing oddly through the gloom.
Yes, cried the priest, running his finger over some text.
We have to move, snapped Drake.
The shadows, whispered Thaddeus,
looking up from his journal and watching the silhouetted guards as they raced into the light. They were trailing long shadows as they sprinted, but their shadows also reached out before them, as though there were a light behind them too. Several lights, in fact, because the shadows ahead of them had fragmented, spreading fingers of darkness across the floor.
They need to...
Thaddeus hesitated.
What?
Demanded Drake, as the tide of pyramids roared towards them.
Damn!
Gasped Ordus, as one of the guard's shadows rose from the ground and enveloped him.
What is that?
Cried Drake, gripping his pistol. The guard staggered and lurched as the darkness wrapped around him, a black serpentine coil lashing around his nose and mouth until he fell to the floor, moaning and punching at the shape, unable to breathe. Another guard fell in the same way, attacked by his shadow. It spread itself across his face, and his muffled cries rang out as he struggled to breathe. He tried to rise, but more of the shadows reared up, twisting around his arms and legs, dragging him down. There was an audible crack as his back snapped.
Halt!
cried Drake to the rest of the guards. Heat and light exploded behind them as Pius Vaughan fired her burner into the pyramid drones. The front wave was just seconds away as the ground was trembling under their weight. Vaughan heaved her burner from side to side, drenching them in flames.
"What do we do?" demanded Drake, grabbing Thaddeus by his robes. "The light is a lie," whispered the priest, lurching forwards and starting to run in a new direction. "Close your eyes. The light is a lie. Run to the warmth."
It sounded like the words of a madman, but there was no time left to do anything else.
"You heard him,"
cried Drake, ignoring Isola's incredulous expression. Drake closed his eye and deactivated the ocular implant that filled his other socket. At first, he felt nothing, distracted by the deafening roar of the pyramids behind him. But then, after a few seconds, he felt a warm current on the air. It was nothing like the fierce heat of Vaughan's flamer, more like the sticky, humid heat of precipice. Blind and deafened, he started to run towards it, following the trail of warmth, using it like a beacon. He could still hear the muffled cries of his guard as the shadows crushed the life from him. Finally, he stumbled to a halt as his leg sank into a thick, viscous substance, knee-high and the temperature of blood.
"You're in," said Thaddeus, grabbing his arm and pulling him deeper into the pool. "Look."
Drake opened his eye and saw he was inside a black prism. It was like being inside a piece of faceted, hollowed-out onyx. The chamber was much smaller than the previous ones, 30 feet wide and filled with rippling oil-black liquid. It was a maglev chamber. Drake had seen many others in this exact same shape, but none of them had been filled with liquid. The others crashed into the pool, causing a sluggish wave, but no splashes.
"What is this?" muttered Ordus, grimacing at the odd way the liquid clung to her flight suit.
"Thaddeus!" snapped Drake, looking around for a control panel. "The controls!"
The priest nodded and looked at Vaughan.
"Hold them off."
As he spewed another gout of flame into the darkness, Drake's guards began firing too, blasting furiously into the heaving mass of black pyramids. Thaddeus waded to the back of the chamber, and the others added their shots to the furious barrage. Drake, Isola, Corval and Ordus with their pistols, and Grek with his rickety rifle perched on one shoulder, kicking deafening rounds into the wall of burning drones. It was like firing at a tsunami. The pyramids rolled across the floor and exploded into the chamber. One latched onto Drake's chest, another onto Vaughan's neck. Three thudded into Grek, clattering furiously as they shredded his skin, and he staggered backwards, blood spraying from his beak. There was a loud clink as the chamber closed, turning the opening into another polished facet of the prism. The torrent outside continued, but it crashed uselessly against the surface of the chamber. Drake could not see them through the black crystal, but he could hear them, drumming against the surface and thrashing their limbs. He wrenched the machine from his chest, held it at arm's length, and prepared to shoot it. Then he noticed that the pool of oil was now littered with fragments of the pyramid shells. They were melting and sinking from view. He dropped the drone into the pool. It thrashed its limbs, then froze, as though stunned. Then it fragmented as the oil closed over it, scattering pieces of shell across the gloopy liquid. The others followed his lead, flinging their attackers into the pool with a torrent of curses and gasps. Grek was covered in the things, so he plunged beneath the surface, vanishing from view. He rose a second later, free of the machines but also free of oil, which seemed too heavy to cling to his hide. They all stood there, panting, looking around the chamber, trying to catch their breath. Drake checked them each in turn. Ordus was fine. She barely seemed to have broken a sweat. Corval was studying the chamber with interest, clearly unhurt. Isola was bleeding from a wound to her neck, and her uniform had been torn on one side, but she seemed fine otherwise. Grek was busy chewing on something, biting down with his thick, brutal-looking beak. It was a fragment of shell taken from one of the pyramid devices. As Drake watched, Grek managed to gulp the fragment down, gagging slightly, before leaning back against the faceted walls with his eyes closed, lost in thought. Next to him were the remaining guards. There were three of his men left, and they were looking at the chamber with undisguised dismay, no doubt unnerved by what had just happened to their comrades outside. Thaddeus was still on the far side of the chamber, fiddling with something, so Drake waded through the oil towards him. The priest was running his hand over the crystal's faces, whispering as he used his other hand to tap the surface with his mace. As Drake watched, one of the facets fell back at his touch, revealing a bowl of oil contained in a recess about halfway up the wall, level with Thaddeus's chest. The substance looked identical to the liquid they were standing in, but there was a difference. This was the source of the heat. It radiated from the bowl like animal warmth. There was no mistaking it. The invisible trail they had followed stemmed from this point. Thaddeus was drenched in sweat, his robes clinging to his slabby limbs. He turned to face Drake with a wary expression.
"Carissus, you came all this way just to visit my humble temple?"
He embraced Drake in a damp hug.
"I am honoured, Your Excellency. I will have rooms prepared. When you are rested, meet me in the cloisters, and I will tell you what I have learned."
"I'm Captain Drake, Your Excellency. We're on the Blackstone Fortress?"
Vaughan appeared at Thaddeus's side and gripped his arm, looking concerned. Thaddeus laughed, then frowned, giving Drake a wary look. He looked at Vaughan, who nodded.
"He's right, Excellency," she said. "Captain Drake is helping us find the vault, remember?"
Thaddeus's eyes clouded over, and for a second, his suspicious look was replaced by one of fear. Then he shook his head, puffed out his chest and shrugged her off.
"Of course I remember," he snarled. "I was just showing the captain the controls."
He nodded at the pool, about to say more, when Drake interrupted him.
"Why did you let them run?" "Who?" "My guards. You let them run towards the light. Straight into those shadows. Why didn't you stop them?"
Thaddeus looked pained.
"Forgive me, Captain. My memory."
He clenched his fists, struggling to find the right words.
"Sometimes it plays tricks on me."
The priest looked ashamed of his failure, and Drake's anger faded. He nodded to the bowl of oil.
"How does this work? I've not seen controls like this in any of the other chambers."
Thaddeus nodded, clearly glad to change the subject. By now, the others had gathered around them to watch. Grek was still crunching noisily on a piece of shell.
"Does it only go one place?" he asked.
Thaddeus made a point of ignoring the Kroot and spoke to Drake.
"It leads only to the Ascuris vault. Place your hand in and see."
Drake hesitated, considering the enormity of what lay ahead. He was minutes away from proving or disproving his theory. He plunged his hand into the oil.